in a world of mindless movie cliches. One podcast fights back. Critics are calling it profound, epic, free. Prepare to revisit your video cassette memories of the 1980s and 90s. Behold, it's VHS Rewind.
Just discovered something. For 100,000 years, it was buried in the snow and ice. Now it has found a place to live. Inside. Where no one can see it. Or hear it. Or feel it.
I know I'm human. Some of you are still human. This thing doesn't want to show itself. It wants to hide inside an imitation. It'll fight if it has to. But it's vulnerable out in the open. If it takes us over, then it has no more enemies. Nobody left to kill it. And then it's won.
You guys gotta listen to Gary! He can beat one of those things!
On this episode, we are going to review the classic 1982 film, The Thing. My name is Mark, and I am talking tonight with Christopher.
Is it really me? Are you sure it's me?
let me very strangely heat up this wire and stick it into a little pool of your blood just to see. I have a kind of a question as to why that would or wouldn't work, but I'll tell you.
I have a feeling you didn't like this movie, and that's going to upset me.
No, I've seen this movie, I'm going to say, about 8 times in my life.
That's it?
Yeah, I mean, it was never a classic to me. Like, you know, I'm not saying it's not a classic, I'm not saying it's not a great movie, because I do still to this day feel as though it's a very well done movie. To those who may have not have seen it, it's a film that takes place in Antarctica, and it's a research team that seems to have gotten disconnected from civilization, because in Antarctica you get disconnected from civilization, apparently. It's beautifully shot, and I'm thinking that it was shot on location.
You know, I was going to say that. I was like, you know, I really get the sense of they're being so isolated. Like, you know, we've had this kind of scenario in so many other movies, but I never bought it. I never bought into that concept, but here it really works. I really do get the feeling that they are way out, way, like, they cannot be reached by anybody.
Yeah. You know, and shooting on snow, you know, I've tried this with film cameras, with black and white film cameras, like 16 millimeter or 35 millimeter cameras, and as well as digital. Even if you're just trying to shoot something that's really white and you have your iPhone, it is very difficult. Everything is overexposed, or nothing can really kind of come together because of it's just overpowering. So the movie just looks beautiful. You could sit and watch this movie and think there's a lot of quality from the people behind the lens.
Cinematography by Dean Cundey, who was John Carpenter's go-to man.
H-A-C-K. Hack. Okay. it was shot in Juneau, Alaska, in Canada, and in California. In LA.
Of course.
That has to be, you know, probably some inside shot, you know, like.
I wanted to ask you, like, first thing, like, what did you think of, I don't know how closely you were watching, but
the computer?
Of the some of the technology in this movie. So
yeah, that's right up my alley.
So you had Kurt Russell playing this chess wizard in the beginning.
Well, here's the thing. All right, you know, 1982 computers, personal computers, were really kind of hitting the market. They were starting to pop up in some houses. There was no reason why these graphics needed to be so bad. In 1982, the computers were a little bit better than this. So you could have had something a little bit better to look at.
Better than Wilfred Brimley's, like, I think he's playing asteroids to show how the organism takes over another organism. Like
that is so bad.
On the computer, we're like, wow.
And it was like plugged into a TV, so it's like somebody's Commodore VIC-20 on like a TV with like the vertical hold all screwed up or something.
I knew you would have something.
On the other hand, the hardware was really interesting to look at. It was really early stuff.
There's a scene where, who was it? It was Palmer. He's watching a game show and he's like, I know how that one ends. So he goes over to the VCR, which is like this massive, I think it was a top loader too.
Yeah.
And he puts in something else. And I was like, oh, Mark would like that.
Yeah. I wouldn't mind having a lot of the hardware that was in this. Kurt Russell, he goes and makes a move and with the chess wizard and the computer basically, was there a voice synthesis?
There was. She says, checkmate.
Yeah, she just says, checkmate. So he takes his scotch. I'm thinking it's scotch.
Yeah, it was J.B.
Oh, really? It was Jim Beam? He opens up the mainframe and pours it in. And it's just, what are you doing? Like, it's such a goofy thing to do. Now to get onto the chess thing just for a second. No, this is what's very interesting about chess games and early personal computers. Do you play chess at all?
I used to love chess, but I can never find anybody who was good.
Worthy. Nobody.
Yes, it's true. Like, my dad was like the last one who would play like consistently with me. Mm-hmm. And, you know, he knew how to play.
Yeah, I mean, I think I'm okay. Like, I can get by. You know, I'm thinking maybe four steps ahead, maybe three. But there's an Atari cartridge, an Atari game, like for the 2600, just called Chess, or maybe Chess Master. I'm not really sure. And the programming in it is so unique that when you're playing it, you're really having a very good chess experience. On maybe a middle, like you're playing with somebody who's a little bit better than normal. And you know, it's really interesting, just, you know, to point out. So,
and the graphics playing, are better than this chess wizard?
You know, they're probably about the same level. I mean, we're talking Atari 2600, probably with just a grid and black and white pieces.
So,
I don't know if they had brought color into that particular game. If you remember, the old Ataris actually had a black and white setting in the back.
Did it?
Yeah, it had a little black and white or color. Depending on if you had a black and white TV or a colored TV.
I did not know. I don't remember.
Yeah, the good old Stella.
It's still-
that was the name of the Atari 2600 before it was released.
That's awesome.
But so to get back to the movie, it was interesting to see the early video games, and the isolation was really, really.
They really do capture that really well.
Mm-hmm.
And then when things start to go awry.
Yeah, I mean, what were those guys? Norwegian, right?
Chopper
basically.
But they're Norwegians, yes.
Chopper comes overhead, a little too close for comfort, I'm assuming.
Because it's shooting at a dog that's running away.
Shooting at a dog that seems friendly.
That dog was creepy. That dog was creepier than the kid in The Omen. I thought the way they get the dog to do these stares and make it mean something is like just really, I was amazed.
You know what kind of feeling I got with this movie was Alien. You had that claustrophobia. Even though they're outdoors, they're stuck. Yeah, they really can't go anywhere.
They can't go very far, right?
Another thing that I found interesting is, you know, I don't know what the weather is supposed to be in Antarctica. For instance, you know, I'm going to just, as a side note, I'm going to see if Siri can tell me what the weather is in Antarctica right now. What is the weather in Antarctica right now? So he was like outside. Weather
information for Antarctica. Sorry about that.
Ah, Siri coming to the rescue. what a piece of junk. So he's like outside without a coat, you know?
Yeah, I didn't understand that as well. Like they would be able, like you say, to go outside in various stages of undress without being very, very cold.
But then at night it's like 40 below.
At least. I mean, we're talking glacial ice surrounding them, so I don't know how he could. I don't care how much scotch he has in him.
Yeah, like, I mean, he might be fooling himself for a few minutes. Hold on, I'm going to see if Google can do it. Okay, Google. What is the weather in Antarctica? Ah, oh, for crap's sake.
I can't tell. It's all white.
What is the weather in Antarctica right now? Crap sakes. Madurko. It brought me to a website at least, not like Siri was like. Right now it is 12 degrees, and today it was a high of minus 33 and a low of minus 45. I don't know how that works. It's funny because it says it's 12 degrees, but it feels like minus one.
Ouch.
So yeah, I mean, it's cold there, so I cannot imagine going outside in a minus 33 degrees.
With as little as you see.
With a bomber jacket on.
I know. and no hats at all. Like, very few.
No earmuffs.
Except this ridiculous hat that Kurt Russell wears in a couple of scenes.
Yeah. And his beard. That's about it. So the Norwegians are shooting at them. Things get out of hand. Who ends up shooting a Norwegian?
Was that Gary? It was Gary. He's like the tall.
You're better at like summing up stories. So if you don't mind, I'm gonna hand that over to you.
Well, so now the dog is in our American camp now, and the Norwegians are dead, and so Kurt and. I forget who went with. Oh, it was Copper goes over to the Norwegian camp to see what they can find out, and they discover it looks like a coffin. You know, not a coffin, but an ice.
Yeah, it's almost like they cut. They discovered something, and they cut it out of the ice to bring it back to analyze it. That's what I kind of got from it.
And there's a lot of dead bodies at the Norwegian place.
Yeah.
So, we realize that the dog in our first major set piece is actually an alien or something.
Yeah, I don't know if it's an alien. It's something thing. Unhuman.
And it starts to. It's been put in the kennel, so it starts to take over all of the other dogs.
Mm-hmm.
And so we discover, and our cast of characters. Can we talk about this cast?
Like starting with T.K. Carter.
Who is he? Why do you keep mentioning him? I don't.
T.K. Carter was. I'm looking at his billing. I remember him being floating around a lot in the late '80s. Throughout the '80s, he was on Punky Brewster.
No way.
Yeah, he was in 227. Well, it says here he was in 227. I don't recall him being in 227. He was in Ski Patrol. He was
absolutely nothing this guy has been
really,
in.
Really? He's actually a relatively decent comedian.
Wait, he was in Domino with Keira Knightley? I don't remember that.
I'm looking here to see what I might have known him from specifically, but Punky I think he was Brewster. Just kind of always around.
Yeah,
it was probably Punky Brewster that I originally knew, and Dr. Detroit, I remember him in. And of course he was in The Thing.
He was also on an episode of Quincy.
Well, you know.
Corvette Summer.
Couple good times episodes. Which I've been watching a lot lately, actually.
What, Good Times?
Yeah, it's a pretty decent show.
Until James leaves.
Yeah, I can't. Those are unwatchable.
And then everything's JJ like
dynamite. Yeah. And Michael's joining the gang, and Thelma's getting hotter. I don't know what happened to Thelma.
So we have TK Carter, your favorite. We have my favorite, Wilfred Brimley.
Yeah, I mean, how can you not? All you just want to do is eat oatmeal when you see that guy.
Who has one of the great freakout scenes. I'll kill
him. He smashed up some of the chopper pretty good. Nobody Childs, go see if he got to the tractor.
Nobody gets in and out of here. Nobody! Guys, think I'm crazy? Well, that's fine. Most of you don't know what's going on around here. Hold on, damn well. Sure, some of you do.
Christ.
He got most of the chopper and the tractor. And he's killed the rest of the dogs.
Gary, wait a minute, wait a minute. Go around to the map room door. Talk to him. Get a table from the lab.
You think that thing wanted to be an animal? No dogs make it 1,000 miles to the coast. No, you don't understand. That thing wanted to be us. Joe gets out. Everything on the face of the earth!
Okay, Blair. Come on, man. You don't want to hurt anybody.
I'll kill you!
That will only Wilfred Brimley can do.
Yeah, he's pretty awesome. I think he's a very good actor, or was a very good actor.
You know who I didn't.
Oh no, he's still alive. You know,
Wilfred Brimley is not still alive. That's
there's
not-
no there's no death date. It just says born.
That's hilarious.
He's not as old as I thought either.
He's not 104.
No, he was 1934, so that makes him 80.
Oh. Still, I'm surprised.
Or is that 90? No, 80, I mean, right?
He looks 80 in this movie.
You know what? When I was a kid, Wilfred Brimley looked 80.
Exactly.
And that was like, you know, 25 plus years ago.
I mean, besides those two and Kurt Russell, I mean, just the entire cast of men.
Wait, how old are you right now, if you don't mind me calling you out on this? You're in your mid-40s, right?
I am in my late 40s.
Oh, I didn't know that. Well, good for you. I see pictures of you. You don't look your age. So, he was 48 years old in that role.
And he looks 80.
He looks 80. He always looks 80. His 80 is a perfect age for Wilfred Brimley. Even his name sounds like he's 80. He was in Cocoon as like probably an 80-year-old, and he was only like 50. He was born in 1934.
Wow, that's 1 year before Elvis.
Unless this is wrong or something. I don't know. He seems 600 years old to me.
I know, he always does.
Grumpy, yeah.
So, I mean, we have a great, great, great cast of
Well, did you mention Kurt Russell?
I will.
I'm sorry.
There with an amazing beard.
Kurt Russell.
We love you.
I like Kurt Russell.
That was, he was in his, I won't say, yeah, I'll say his prime. He was in John Carpenter movies, who was the director, who is in his prime right now.
Well, what's your favorite movie from him? What's your favorite Kurt Russell role outside of this?
Elvis.
Oh, that's right. I forgot he was in
Tango and Cash.
What was it? What was that thing? FUBAR.
Shut up. Tango and Cash is great.
I saw it in the theater and I enjoyed it.
You know, I like his genre stuff. I like Tango and Cash. I like.
But you got Escape from New York. You got Used Cars.
Oh, Used Cars. I forgot about that.
Silkwood. Overboard, classic comedy with
Oy.
Goldie Hawn in the thong.
Oy. Ew. There's Tequila Sunrise.
Tequila Sunrise. That was a Tequila Sunrise was one of these movies that when I worked at Blockbuster Video was the big shit when it came out. Everyone was like, I gotta rent Tequila Sunrise for months. It was like, that's all people rented.
It's horrible. It's not really very good.
And let's not forget about Backdraft.
I was going to say, let's not forget about Escape from L.A.
Hey, he played Elvis twice, you know.
What, 3,000 Miles to Graceland?
No, Forrest Gump.
He wasn't.
It says here, Forrest Gump, he played Elvis.
I didn't know that.
He played the voice.
People swear by the movie Tombstone, but I have never seen it.
I've never seen it. I'm not that big on Westerns, and I really wish I would get more into them.
And I don't like Westerns.
I really like Little House.
They're for people as old as Wilford Brimley.
Who apparently isn't as old as we think, though.
But yeah, I mean, you know who I didn't recognize in this cast, and I should have? Is the guy who played Palmer is actually David Clennon, who was like the mean guy on 30-something.
Mm-hmm.
And I just saw him in Gone Girl, too. But that's amazing. I guess I just don't recognize him without a beard.
I never saw 30-something. I recognize him. Yeah, I never watched 30. It was before my – I mean, it was after my time. Before my time, yeah.
Let's see what else David Clennon has been in. I like him. He's a real good bad guy.
But all in all, the acting I felt was very good. It was top notch.
Everybody is good, with the limited opportunity to offer.
Yeah, there's not much of a set here.
Definite characterizations.
It's basically shot in the equivalent of a 3-bedroom apartment. Right.
There's the inside, the outside, and then underground.
Yeah, and there's also that weird room in the middle that they kept Wilford Brimley in after he had a panic attack.
Right, right. Oh, and then there's the Norwegian camp, which they go to.
So, you know, what I thought was really crazy was when – I'm trying to remember how this came about – where the you see this monster that has eaten the dog and it has faces.
Right, the dog sort of – shows his true face and starts flinging tendrils and tentacles out at the other dogs.
But what started that whole thing? Like, what was the what brought everyone into that room?
They just put the dog in the kennel with the other dogs to lock him up for the night.
Oh, right, right, right. And all the dogs are like, right, 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 right.
That there was a good thing. Scream during that scene too. A couple, actually. We should do a montage of all the thing screams during.
I'll
this
throw movie. Them in throughout.
Yeah. when it gets Bennings has another good scream. He's the one who sort of they're in the storeroom and they're packing these things.
Mm-hmm.
The storeroom and he gets absorbed and runs out, and when they catch him in the snow, he's like, "Rawr!"
And the tentacles from this thing are the creepiest thing of all time.
So I'm curious what you think of the effects, which are the main selling point of the
movie. For a 1982 movie, I couldn't be happier with the way that the effects looked. They were simple. They weren't that special. You know, we're talking about, how was this done, do you think? Stop motion? Or do you think puppeteering?
Puppeteering, and it's all practical effects, so I don't care how plastic some of the stuff looks.
Mm-hmm.
I will take this over CGI any day.
I'll take this over CGI Jurassic Park, you know, and all that kind of stuff.
I just love these kinds of effects, and I just don't understand why people don't do this anymore.
Yeah, you know, I know it takes a lot more work, and it takes actual skill. I agree with you. You know, it's so much more fulfilling to see an actual, I hate to say analog, but an actual movement instead of the replication of it.
And again, some of the effects don't look so great. They look they look like effects, but
it's supposed to. In fact,
in fact, they look so fake and plastic that I've been having my 6-year-old watch this with me, and you know she's not scared by it. You know, even when there's the popping eyes or the head falling off the mm-hmm. table and sprouting, you know, spider legs.
You know what? That was actually very cool. I thought that was a very, it was creepy and eerie enough. I really like that scene.
I love this movie. You said,
I love the way that the spider crawled. You know, the way it walked and everything. It looked very good to me.
With the head and then the eyeballs sort of on tendrils.
Yeah.
You know, whoop, whoop.
Yeah, I thought I was very happy.
I think the effects are great. Again, I know they don't look great. I do think they are great, if that makes any sense.
For 1982, you were really not getting much better than this.
Hey, when this first came out, I thought it was mind-blowing. I thought it was great.
And you know,
I still think it's great.
Yeah,
I mean,
let's not compare it. You can't, like, what looks better, you know?
So you said you were kind of bored by this?
Yeah, I just found myself kind of like, all right, let's get on with it already. Like, I just felt like it was dragging in a couple of the scenes.
I think it builds really nicely from when the Norwegians come and they're shooting at the dog. We don't know what's going on. I mean, we know from the poster what's going on, but you know, I like the way everything unfolds, and I don't think there's any lag time.
I felt like the blood drawing scene was really drawn out, like basically the Russian roulette.
Oh, that was great, and then
it was a great scene, but it went on forever.
I was thinking about that because, again, I was watching that with my 6-year-old, and I'm like, is she going to get bored by this? You know, she just wants to see the monsters pop out.
Well, here's the thing. But this is what I'm sorry, go on.
I played the whole scene, and no, I think she got into, like, the tension.
Building up the tension is something I'm overlooking because I knew the outcome already. So maybe if I had never seen it, I wouldn't have expected, you know, I just, it's like, all right, let's get to it already. But
maybe every,
I mean, he basically has a flamethrower that I don't know exactly how a flamethrower works. Everything I know about flamethrowers, I learned from this movie. So I guess it stays a little bit like a pilot light. So what he does is he has a piece of wire that he took a really long time stripping
blood from one of you things,
and he's heating it. He basically drew blood from all the people and put it in a petri dish.
Crawl away from
and labeled it. Right. Now,
right.
Let me ask you, wouldn't it have been easier to heat up that wire and just stick somebody with it? Wouldn't that be the same thing?
Maybe. But then, so go on. So
I understand the concept was supposedly to have just the blood individual, like, you know, it's to protect itself. But
then it takes shape when he gets to the alien, to the thing's blood. It seemed to have taken a shape.
Like it takes a bite almost.
It jumps out. And I didn't. And then when the blood is spilled, it starts moving away.
That didn't look so great. I felt like it should have looked better. It could have been done so much. I can think of 100 ways to just do it.
But I was wondering, so are those little drops of blood then all alive? Are they a threat? You know, so I'm not sure if I examine this closely, if I examine the movie closely.
Yeah, it was getting dumb at this point.
It wasn't getting dumb.
Well, how they would like turning on each other, and I'm like, all right, well, you know what? You guys would have turned on each other in real life a lot sooner than this. You know what's interesting is that the Kurt Russell character is pretty level-headed. And he's the hippie kind of calm guy until they don't let him in.
Right.
And he has to break it back in. The temperature's dropping. And all of a sudden, he has the most ridiculous thing of all time. He has a stick of dynamite. Like, you know, it's like 8 sticks of dynamite wrapped together. I mean, dynamite is so unstable, right? that you just couldn't do what he was doing. You know, like that it would have blown up. And it was just, why would they just have such old school dynamite like that?
It's 1982.
Oh my God. It looks like the, if you watch Batman from 1966, this is what, like, you know, the, the Riddler's or whoever's throwing. You know, and you throw it. Pow, you know.
But if I'm just wondering if I follow this closely, you know, is there consistency with what the thing can do, how it operates, how it takes people over, who it takes over at what point? You know, I always get lost when I try to do it, and then I just fall back to enjoying the movie. I do enjoy the movie without again following who gets it and when. You know, who turns when.
Well, personally, I would love to see this in a theater. This is one of these movies that I think that there are certain scenes with the white background that are just meant to be there to just kind of, like, you're indoors, and then all of a sudden you're outdoors, and you're kind of blinded, you're squinting because of the overpowering look of the snow. And that's something I would really like to experience.
I'd like to see the credits on a big screen where, you know, you have the music over the credits, and then there's the shot from outer space, and that shows the spaceship, and then the title of the movie sort of burns through.
That I thought was a cool effect as well. It was simple.
That was good. I think they used that in the original thing too, only, you know, it was done much better, much more polished here. But I wish I could see that on a big screen.
Yeah, this is one of these movies where I felt as though it really would lend itself very well to be seen
with
an actual print.
Yeah.
So hopefully one day it'll
pop up. I think it's on Blu-ray. I think this movie's on Blu-ray.
What version did you watch? You watched it on DVD?
Yeah, I have a DVD special edition.
I have
time ago.
I have a DVD, probably less special edition. But I wanted to watch it in HD, so I did kind of through the gray world of the underbelly of the universe of the internet, I acquired a 1080p version from the Blu-ray. And it did look very, very good. I don't know, there's something about seeing it in a theater that would just kind of... I also did not watch it with surround on, I just watched it through standard television.
What?
Well, you know, to watch a lot of this type of stuff, you have to really crank it. And I was watching it pretty late, and I'm like, oh, I don't feel like setting it all up right now. but the next time I watch this, which will probably be in a few years, I'll do the full experience.
I do watch this periodically. I do like it. You know,
yeah, I find myself watching it too every once in a while.
Man, it's on cable all the time lately.
Oh, really? I don't think I've ever caught it on cable. Thank God.
At least they're showing it letterboxed. I assume it's an HD. I don't have an HD TV, so I don't know.
Well, you will. You will have an HD TV soon, one day, even if I have to send it to you. There's also Richard Masser, I wanted to mention, who is a great character actor.
Yep. I mean, we've seen him in everything, including One Day at a Time. I'm sure everybody remembers him in One Day at a Time.
One Day at a Time. It's a great show. Well, I don't know if it was a great show. I know it was a show.
Ouch.
No, I don't really remember.
I think he was in the early episodes, right? As
I don't remember Bonnie what Franklin's. He was, but...
I think he was Bonnie Franklin's boyfriend.
Was he ever in a Woody Allen movie? And he was in MASH, don't forget.
He was not in MASH.
One episode.
Oh, Jesus. I know he was in License to Drive as Corey Haim's father.
I never saw License to Drive, unfortunately.
And he was in Rent-A-Cop with Burt Reynolds.
Yeah, he was in 21 episodes of One Day at a Time.
Ouch. I don't think he was in a Woody movie.
It's weird. I'm looking here, and it's almost as though I should know him. I shouldn't know him, because I have not seen anything he's done.
No, I'm sure if you look closer, you must.
He was also in 30-something. One episode.
Wow, this is like a 30-something alumni.
Oh, boy. I've never seen it, so I'm wondering if we should do that.
That would be awesome. Well, he was in It, the TV miniseries. He was in Blossom.
Only My Girl. I remember him in My Girl.
I've never seen My Girl. I will never see My Girl.
Yes, you will.
Yeah, I guess License to Drive is the one that everybody might know him.
Not me.
So what did you think of the ending of this flick? Not to give it away, but...
I thought it was appropriate. I was pretty much ready for it to end by that point. I don't know why the movie rubbed me the wrong way this time. But I'm like, all right, let's get on with it already.
I wasn't a big fan of the final thing that we see, which is this huge, ginormous thing. And Kurt Russell's like, fuck you too, and throws the dynamite that you hate so much.
Oh, right. It was very hero, how do you put it? It was very uncharacteristic for his character at that point. I mean, either that or, you know, maybe he's gone through the same changes as the girl at the end of Texas Chainsaw Massacre. Because now he's acting the way he wouldn't normally act. You know, he's beyond his breaking point.
Maybe.
No, I don't know.
Maybe.
I don't really know what Kurt Russell was doing there. I don't know what his job was. What was his function? To be the sarcastic guy? Like, I'm the cool guy who just hangs out.
I guess, that's the impression.
What were any of them doing?
Just on the basis of that strange, I don't know if it's a cowboy hat that he wears or some Mexican hat that he had on his head.
Yeah, like, did he intentionally pack this, you know? And how much alcohol did he pack to, you know, because he's drinking relatively heavily, you kind of assume.
I'm telling you, it's a lot of JB that is consumed.
And they seem to have the big quart, right? So let's say you have 10 quarts, right? Which is a tremendous amount of alcohol. Drinking at that pace, he's probably going through a quart a week. So, maybe 10 would be a good 2.5 months. Of what straight else is drinking. He do? I don't know. But the movie was a beautifully shot movie. I'm very happy that I did watch it. I don't know. Just I wanted to get through it for whatever reason.
It's awesome. Everybody needs to see it. The ending is, like you say, it's. I think it's appropriate. It leaves you on an ambiguous note. I think it's really an effective movie all around.
Yeah. And you realize that the Norwegians were totally in the right for trying to shoot this animal. Damn it. They're always right.
Have you ever, I'm just curious, you know, like we did this with The Omen. Have you seen the remake come prequel that they did?
No.
Because the remake come prequel come reboot actually was supposed to be the Norwegian story.
I didn't know that at all. I didn't even know a thing 2 existed.
It's not really a thing 2. It's the thing 2011. And it's
who's in that? I'm looking.
Mary Elizabeth Winstead, who, you know, I love. But nobody else of any note that I can think of. And I, like I say, I love Mary Elizabeth Winstead.
These are all Norwegians.
Does she belong in a movie about? Nah, I don't. It's just she didn't fit.
They have the one black guy and everything. They do one black guy.
It's supposed to be the Norwegian story, but beat for beat, it's the same story as in the 1982 original. It's just. They're supposed to be Norwegians. That's it. Otherwise, it's the same shtick. And it does not work. You know why? Because there's a lot of CGI in it. The monsters don't look anywhere near as good as I think they do in this original.
Now, you know what's interesting?
Why do they remake these movies and then just slavishly follow the original? I don't understand what the point of that is.
How did the thing do originally? Do you know? Like, what was its...
It tanked. It was a huge box office failure when it first came out in 82.
Mm-hmm.
I went to see it. But it got, you know, it's got its cult following now, and I think it's acknowledged as a classic, certainly amongst a certain generation.
Yeah, I mean, the new one cost $38 million to make, and it grossed $16
million. Ew.
How do you make money doing that?
I don't know. That's what I just don't get it.
I'm looking up the thing. I want to see. All right, it cost $15 million to make the 1982 thing. Opening weekend made $3 million bucks. For back then, that's tremendous. It also opened on 840 screens.
So I think that's bad. I don't know.
I don't know. I'm thinking that did very well. It grossed nearly $20 million. You know what? They released it. It looks like it was released as kind of a Christmas movie. Not, you know, literally.
No, wasn't it? I think it was summer. The original.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. It was released in July, and they're counting up until December. They're giving all these different figures, basically. But I think that it made a tremendous amount of money for... I don't really know how they estimate all this kind of stuff, because it just says USA, 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 and there's different figures. But I don't know. I think it made a lot of money. It might not have been an overwhelming success, but I think that it made back its money. I mean, opening weekend, it brought in, you know, a fifth of its budget.
I don't know. Like I say, I don't know how these grosses work and what's good, what's bad.
Yeah.
But it is a classic.
Yeah, I'm happy with this.
What is your are you a John Carpenter fan?
You know, I'm
oh, damn.
No. I appreciate him, but I don't think he does any, you know, it's really kind of tough for me to say this, but he's not like a Hitchcock. He does very good work, but I don't think that his work is so individualistic as people tend to give him credit for. I'm not saying it's not good. I'm not saying that he doesn't put quality into his productions. But what I'm saying is people tend to think that he's the Hitchcock of horror. And he's just, you know, he's not.
I think he's great up until a point. There is a point where there is a drop in quality, and then it becomes a really precipitous drop.
Right, like in the 90s, what did he do?
Oh,
my
God. Did
he do a bunch of garbage in the 90s?
Did garbage in the 90s. And, you know, people say In the Mouth of Madness is good, but I didn't think that was...
Escape from LA.
It was okay. Escape from LA is one of the worst movies I have ever seen.
Well, Halloween 4, The Return of Michael Myers.
No, he didn't do that. Give him credit. He did not do that.
He's listed here.
No, it's because his name...
Oh, it's like Stephen King.
Yeah, he's connected to
the... Oh, you're right. Dwight H. Little did.
Village of the Damned, you know, just awful stuff. Like, really? What was he thinking? Memoirs of an Invisible Man with Chevy Chase? Oy.
Oh, yeah, but then he did have some stuff that probably were dismal failures, but did well in the video store, like They Live.
Which is that's a good one. I do like that one.
I forgot he did Christine.
Yeah, that's an early one.
Yeah, although Christine, I think, is overrated.
Yeah, it's eh.
The inflatable car, you know.
Ouch.
But, you know, I'm looking here and, you know, obviously Halloween, blah, blah, blah. You know, it's like, all right, we get it. He fell backwards into a big pile of shit on that one because he had a lot of talent working with him for Halloween. He did the Elvis TV movie, which you probably love. The Fog was very good.
Fog is great.
Escape from New York, very good.
Great.
Starman, I personally liked a lot.
I remember liking it. I just haven't seen
it. It's not really worth going back to. I've seen it, but I liked it when I was a kid.
Just to see Jeff Bridges, you know, giving a good performance when he was young.
But you go between They Live and his next production of Memoirs of an Invisible Man.
Boy, that's what I mean.
These movies, and I have not seen them all, but Body Bags, it's just a TV movie. In the Mouth of Madness, Village of the Damned.
Horrible. Horrible.
Escape from L.A., Vampires, which I don't remember.
That starts okay, but then it's really not... It's tedious by the end. I didn't like that. And Ghost of Mars is another one where I'm like, eh.
But, you know, he wrote... he did a lot of writing throughout the 2000s. Where he did, like, Michael vs. Jason.
Did he? No, he did
not. That's what he says here. It says he wrote a short. I don't know. I don't know. I've never really been in love with his work. I think it's very good. I think Halloween might be his best work. I don't know how you feel about Halloween.
It's okay. I like Halloween, of course, but I prefer the cheesier sequels. You know, I know how that sounds, where I'm sort of giving short shrift to the, again, classic original. But I mean, yes, it's good, but I like the silliness and the cheesiness of the sequels. Mm-hmm. Halloween 2 had more blood in it, and it's stupider, so it's more fun.
I liked Halloween for a number of reasons. This isn't about Halloween, but there was a certain level of horror that I felt like you can get away with back then, like a psychological horror. And I feel like he lost his way quickly. You take the horror of The Thing, there is a lot of psychological stuff going on here. Like, I consider the blood scene to be kind of like Russian roulette. And, you don't get that very often. Now, granted, I'm like, all right, get on with it. But the first time I saw that, I remember it being completely like, oh, I don't want to know. What's going to happen? You know, that type of stuff.
And when it does happen, it's awesome.
You jump, and it's like, ah, oh my God. And you know what was actually a very good scene? Now that I remember it. When he can't get the torch to work, the flamethrower.
Which conveniently doesn't work when we could probably end the movie right here if we just kill this thing.
It's a... How frustrating must that be?
So it wasn't just that his flamethrower wasn't working. It's like the other guy who also has a flamethrower.
He's frozen.
I'm like, guys, come on.
Get with it. But I don't know. So, all in all, I give this movie a solid 6.5 out of 10. Now, that's a good rating for me.
Oh.
Almost no movies make it to 9.
What?
No movie has ever made it to 10.
This is... What?
I critique heavily.
I don't. I think this is... I'm gonna give it a 9.
You know what? I'll bring my scale down to a 1 to 8 then for you.
I think it's a great movie. It's in my collection. It's one of those movies that I am showing to my kids. So
I'm gonna give it letter grades then. I give it a B. Not a B plus, but not a B minus, a B.
Alright, I'll give it an A. I don't know why I'm not giving it an A plus.
I know why.
Why? There's no reason not to.
I can't talk about that here.
But yes, seek this out. It's a great one.
Yeah, it's definitely easy to find. You can easily find The Thing. Probably pops up on Netflix every once in a while on streaming.
And but, it's really playing, it's making the rounds on cable. Like, every other day it's on cable.
And watch it in the dark, so you can really see the effect of these bright scenes that just kind of pop out of nowhere. But
I didn't realize you weren't a Carpenter lover, so I'll be interested to see what you say next week when we talk about George Romero and Creepshow.
never heard of George Romero, but I'm interested to hear about him.
Oh, buzzing.
Just kidding. All right, I'll talk to you next time.
Sure.